Wake Up America, time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are broadcasting from the stage of the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco, California. And our visit to this beautiful city marks the climax of our bond-selling tour for this season. And as is our sly custom, we've hornswoggled every person in this audience into buying a war bond as his or her price of admission. We are now ready to announce the total of the bonds bought by these patriotic San Franciscans. There are 3,200 people seated in this vast hall, plus 500 standees. And these 3,700 individual citizens have bought bonds in denominations of $50 to $5,000 for a total of $4,752,900. But in addition, ladies and gentlemen, 18 $50,000 bonds were purchased by labor and business organizations, bringing San Francisco's grand total up to $5,652,800. These figures speak for themselves, and they speak very well for San Francisco. And now for our program, spontaneous and unrehearsed as usual. Information, Please offers tonight its regular trio, John Kieran of the New York Sun, Oscar Levant, the eminent pianist, and the versatile Franklin P. Adams, plus our charming guest, the lady who created Mrs. Miniver, Miss Jan Struther. We're going to begin with a question from Mrs. Myrtle Cherryman of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Where do these quotations about color combinations come from? They're going to be three different combinations, and we have to get the source of two out of three. The first is purple and gold. Purple and gold. Miss Struther.
The Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold. His cohorts were glistening in purple and gold.
Any mistake in there, Mr.
Gleaming.
Yes, gleaming instead of glistening.
Well, glistening sounds nicer.
If it had sounded nicer to Byron, he would have said it, Miss Struther. That's quite right. From the destruction of Sennacherib. Very good. That gives us purple and gold. Let's change our colors. Green and yellow. Where would you, Mr. Kieran?
She sat like Patience on a monument, with a green and yellow melancholy, from As You Like It. No, from Twelfth Night.
I think that's right. Are both green and yellow used there, Mr. Adams?
A green and yellow basket.
that is the less classical quotation, Mr. Adams, and quite right. I'm sure that Mr. Kieran is equally correct. How about green and blue and white? Green and blue and white. This is a tough one. That's really tough. Well, I'll count that one wrong, but suppose I give you a hint and tell you it's from the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Does that help any of you? The water, the water like a witch's oils, burnt green and blue and white, from the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Well, that gives us two out of three and passes us on to a question from Isaiah Heller of Long Island City, New York. Each of these words, Miss Struther and gentlemen, is derived from the name of an animal. Name the animal. Now, the first word is muscle. Just the ordinary word muscle, M-U-S-C-L-E, Mr. Levant?
No, I'm wrong, Clay.
Was that... I never saw you put your hand down more quickly. Mr. Adams?
From a mouse.
Yes, from a mouse. So what is the Latin from which it comes?
M-U-S, mus.
Musculus, a little mouse. That's quite right. Now, vaccinate comes from the name of an animal. From what animal, Miss Struther?
A cow.
Cow. Again from the Latin. What would be the Latin?
Vaca.
Approximately. Vaca, yes, vaca, a cow. And finally, the word, the common word, cynic.
What?
Cynic. Cynic?
Mr. Cynic.
Cynic. Cynic. Mr. Kieran.
Dog, from the Greek.
Yes, from the Greek, kinos, a dog, and the old sect of cynics, the Greek sects, were
right.
Called that because they were kind of snappish and surly, as dogs are popularly supposed to be. They aren't really, in case there are any dogs listening. Helen Bird of Los Angeles, California, sends this one in. This is a musical question, Mr. Rutherford and gentlemen. What is the source or derivation of each of these themes? Let's have the first. The composer got that idea, Mr. Levant.
All I could get out of it is a nervous performance.
That theme was derived from something else.
From a nervous breakdown.
Well, in this case, what was being played, by the way?
I don't know. I would have answered... you don't think I would have been so nonsensical. I don't know.
Oh, well, come. Yes, I would.
Tell me.
It's from the First Symphony of Brahms.
It is?
And doesn't it remind you of anything? Doesn't it remind you of chimes?
Well, chimes? I know the First Symphony of Brahms very well. I'm going to send my records back.
Not well enough. Well, the theme was apparently suggested. Mr. Brother, you might remember this.
From... Is that the horn theme in the introduction to the last movie?
I don't know. That doesn't sound like chimes at all. Anyway, Brahms got the idea from listening to the chimes of Westminster. Now let's have the next theme, see what we can do with it.
I know.
Mr. Levant?
American American in Paris. That's a taxicab reference in Paris by George Gershwin.
Yes, that's quite right. The sound of taxi horn suggested that to Mr. Gershwin. And now the third and last. Mr. Adams?
Bugle.
Bugle is right. Yes, bugle call and the song, of course.
Over there.
Well, we could get 2 out of 3 on that. John A. Yon of Mineola, Long Island, sends this one in. Who or what, in fact or fiction, was drawn from one place to another by means of the following conveyance? In the first case, swans. Mr. Kieran?
Lita.
Well, she was drawn to the swan.
Oh, that's right. Now, you want Wagner.
Lohengrin.
Lohengrin, was he drawn by a swan?
Drawn off by swans.
Well, I mean, it all depends on your stage management.
I think so. Venus, too. Isn't Venus usually... doesn't she usually drive a couple of swans?
I haven't seen her that way lately.
No? I believe so. How about someone who is drawn from one place to another by means of a boa, B-O-A-R, in case there be any mistake?
By a boar. How do you spell it?
You can't change animals in mid-program this way, Mr. Levant. Who was drawn by a boar?
How do you spell it?
B-O-A-R. You've never heard of that.
Oh, he knows that.
Mr. Levant?
I don't know. It's like a bull to me.
No, it's... the Norse goddess Freya rode in a court drawn by a boar, I believe. How about someone who was drawn by 6 white horses? Miss Struther?
She'll be coming round the mountain.
Oh, no.
Why not?
She will, too.
Is that right?
Well, do you know anybody else who was drawn by 6 white horses?
I was thinking of the pumpkins again with the Cinderella.
I don't think that we know how many horses there were, Mr.
Many a brewery truck.
Many a brewery truck. Well, I think that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one from Ellen Flaherty of Parkersburg, West Virginia. As you know, our show is opened and closed by means of a friendly rooster. Here is a question about other roosters. What Chanticleer awakened or awakens a priest? A priest. Mr. Kieran?
Well, you mean was Peter in the Bible? Did you call him a priest? He was a disciple.
No, I don't remember.
Cock crew three times. Awakened him to his duty.
I think that's true. I was thinking also of the cock that crowed in the morn and waked the priest all shaven and shorn in the house that Jack built. How about one who awakened a sleeping king? A sleeping king. This is a musical reference, Mr. Levant. Does that help you?
Cock door.
That's correct. You want to go on with your answer, Mr. Adams?
No, that's as much as I know about.
That is absolutely right. The cock in Lecoq d'Or, he awakens King Dodon by sounding the war alarm. And will you remember that if we ever get this again, Mr. Adams?
Yes, sir, then I don't have to go.
Okay, now how about the chanticleer that awakened the farmer from Michigan? Awakened a farmer from Michigan. What one was that, Miss Struther?
Well, it had something to do with, oh, how I wish again that I was in Michigan down on the farm, wasn't it?
That's the one, yes. I miss the rooster, the one that used to wake me up at 4 a.m. You've spent your time in our country to excellent advantage. And that, I think, gives us 2 out of 3. Now, our Varieties reporter is back again with some interesting observations on the perennial subject of food.
Maybe it's just another strange quirk of human nature that under the stress and strain of complicated days such as these, the simple things in life take on a new glory. We seem to gain a greater appreciation of what Edna St. Vincent Millay calls the grace of common things. Our everyday meals, for instance, in spite of rationing and shortages, become real occasions when family and friends get together for a few treasured moments. And a familiar part in this great American scene is played by the 57 varieties. For these Keystone-labeled soups and pickles, sauces and condiments are blessed with all those homey little touches of flavor that are the pride of our painstaking chefs. Years of experience and that intangible instinct of all good cooks have taught them 101 little tricks about seasoning soups just right, putting up pickles so they stay crisp and crunchy as fresh celery, cooking ketchup till it's rich and slow pouring but not one bit too thick. After all, we have only one aim, to bring you uniformly high-quality, fine-flavored foods. And your enthusiastic acceptance of the 57 varieties for these 74 years is proof of the wisdom of our policy.
And now we'll go on with a question from W.E. Neeson of Shreveport, Louisiana. Mr. Struther and gentlemen, I want you to fill a carpenter's kit for us with at least 3 tools or pieces of equipment that are mentioned in lines of poetry. In other words, you have to give me 3 lines of poetry, Mr. Levant.
There was a quotation recently, you don't carve a career, you chisel one.
That's got 2 of them.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, a chisel at any rate. Mm-hmm. How about 2 more, Miss Brother?
Full of wise saws and something...
Modern instruments.
Very good. That gives saw and a chisel. How about filling up our tool kit? Mr. Levant again.
Threw a monkey wrench into the proceedings.
A saying, but not a line of poetry, perhaps. Mr. Kieran?
Sweet Auburn, loveliest village of the plains.
That's a wonderful one. It's very good. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any others?
That was mine.
Why don't you split it with
I Kieran? Saw a beautiful something. Saw.
Yes, we have one saw. We have one saw. Well, there are a number of others. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. I know a hawk from a handsaw, to come back to our saw. Screw your courage to the sticking place.
That's hitting the nail on the head. Yeah.
Something like that. Well, that gives us enough for our carpenter to go on with. Try this one from Miss N.R. McGee of Philadelphia. These places have become identified with certain aspects of city life. San Francisco contains the equivalent of each of them. For example, in London, it's Billingsgate Market. What is it in San Francisco, Mr. Kieran?
Fisherman's Wharf.
Good enough. And it would have been tough on us if you hadn't got that, Mr. Kieran. In Paris, it's Montmartre. What is it in San Francisco, Mr. Adams?
Any hill.
No, not any hill. No, Montmartre is famous, or was famous, for a rather special kind of light, Mr.
You mean for nightlife?
Yes, right. What is your daylife, practically, Mr. Levant? And what place in San Francisco is similarly famous?
It all depends what hotel you're staying at.
The Gold Coast, the Barbary Coast.
The Barbary Coast, Mr. Yeah. Adams, is quite right. In Boston, it's Beacon Hill. What is it in San Francisco, Miss Brother?
Knob Hill.
Knob Hill, yes, quite right. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Try this from Charles F. Calden of Vallejo, California. What might these fictional characters do on boats? The first is Queequeg. If he were on a boat, Mr. Kieran...
If he were on a boat, he'd be a harpooner on a whaling boat.
Yes, a harpooner. He's from what book?
He's from Moby Dick.
From Moby Dick, one of the characters in Moby Dick. Now, suppose the character were Ben-Hur. What might he do on a boat, Mr.?
On a boat.
On a boat. Mr. Levant?
Well, he would be with his horse downstairs.
Not on a boat. On a boat. On a boat. Unless it were a canal boat in the old days, Mr. Adams.
Well, he might row.
On what sort of boat?
On a quadrareme.
On a what-a-reme?
A galley slave boat.
A four-oared boat.
Very good. That sounds like a Kieran answer, Mr. Adams. That's quite right. And he would be a galley slave, as Mr. Levant said. Yes, when one of the episodes of Ben-Hur, he is a galley slave. Mr. Kieran?
It's not a four-oared boat. That's a boat with four banks of
four
oars.
Four banks, that's
Don't
right.
talk to me. Talk to Adams, Mr. Kieran.
Well, I don't know as much about banks as you do, boy.
Now, what might the character Andy Hawks do on a boat? Andy Hawks, Mr. Levant.
Oh, I got that mixed up with showboat. Is that right?
That's right.
I thought I was wrong. Well, no. he gets drunk and his wife hollers.
That I didn't ask for.
He's a skipper.
Yes, he's a skipper.
He would command, same.
He would command a showboat. Where would you find him if you were going to read about him, Mr. Adams?
On the Mississippi.
No, yes, but in what book?
Showboat,
showboat.
I said.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Levant. I didn't hear you. Very good. Showboat
on
is
the
right.
Cotton Blossom.
The Cotton Blossom and Edna Ferber's book, Showboat. Try this one from Miss Helen Gallagher of Philadelphia. Name at least two titles under which each of these melodies is known. We're going to have three melodies played. In each case, each of those melodies has been used for at least two different songs or compositions. Is the problem clear? You have to get two out of three. Let's have the first. Miss Struther?
Danny Boy and the Londonderry Air and several others, I guess.
Kukulian something.
What one?
Kukulian.
Never heard of it.
Well, that doesn't make it wrong.
No, no. Kukulian? Sounds like something out of Ratoff.
That's the Gaelic, which you obviously would know about, and I do.
Well, the Londonderry Air, as you say, it's an Irish tune from County Derry. Would God I Were a Tender Apple Blossom, Mr. Levant, is the title of another song that uses the same theme. And I would have liked to hear you say that sentence. Now the second theme. That's a famous theme, and it's used, Mr. Levant, first?
It was used originally by Tchaikovsky.
Yes.
Then it was used by Warner Brothers in a picture called The Great Lie with Mary Astor, who played it very well. And then it was made into two popular songs called Together We Love, or I Love the... And the other is Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto by Freddie Martin. And if you really want to hear it, hear Horowitz and Rubinstein. They really play it.
What a career it's had.
Everybody's made money out of it, but me. I don't play it.
Has Miss Brother, has Mr. Levant left anything out?
No, but it's Tonight We Love, not Together We Love.
Yes. Still, the result is approximately the
you
same.
You can combine them.
Oh, together, too, yeah. Doesn't scan.
And now the third of the themes. Mr. Kieran?
Well, that would be Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, and it would also be a soldier song. All we do, we sign the payroll, and we never get a so-and-so cent.
Yes. Very good. I like the choice of adjectives. Mr. Adams?
John Brown's Body and also the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Yes, well, that's what Mr. Kieran meant in his first selection. Well, that gives us three out of three.
John Brown's Body was written first.
Good enough. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank the H.J. Heinz Company for giving up their commercial time at this point so that we may say just a few words. Tonight is a memorable one in the history of information, please, because for more than 5 years now, without the intermission of a single week, you and ourselves have been having these pleasant weekly conversations together. And during this time, we feel we've built up a most pleasant relationship. We're going to interrupt that pleasant relationship temporarily. We're going to have a little vacation of 8 weeks, beginning next Monday. And during that interval, we know that all of us will keep on buying war bonds. The mention of war bonds gives me the opportunity of thanking the great cities of Boston, Philadelphia, Hartford, Cleveland, Chicago, and now San Francisco, whose splendid patriotism has made it possible for information, please, to help in the amassing of our grand total for this season, to wit, $275,179,000. But, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's a quarter of $1 billion, more or less, or whether it's a 10-cent war stamp, let's you and I and all of us keep buying until the Axis countries and all that their peoples represent are vanquished utterly and forever. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to our program with a question from Mrs. Ada H. Klemmer of San Francisco, California. Recite the lines that begin in the following ways, which are somewhat similar. Be thou, another line, be she, a third line, be he. In other words, Mr. Curran?
Be thou familiar, but by no means vulgar.
That's a beauty.
From Polonius to his son Laertes, yes, upon setting out for Paris.
Very good. Another one from Shelley that begins, be thou. Does anyone... Can
be
anyone...
thou to my awakening... be thou spirit of a prophecy, O wind, if winter comes...
That's correct. Be thou to the west wind by Shelley. Very good. How about be she? Be she, a line of poetry that begins, be she. Mr. Adams?
Be she...
Percy be she Shelley.
Something, what care I how fair she be?
Yes, but that's not be she, that's she be.
Be she...
You can't reverse your she's that way.
That's the poem.
No, be she fairer than... Yes, that is the poem. Be she fairer than the day or the flowery something in May.
If she be not fair to me, what care I how fair she be?
Yes, you got the poem, but not the exact line. I should give you half credit.
I said she be instead of be she.
I know, but sometimes it makes all the difference in the world. How about be he?
Be he moth.
Be he what?
Be he moth.
Be he moth.
Oh, what a beauty. If it were only a line of poetry.
Elephant.
I get it. I know. An elephant. An old dead elephant. Be he, another line of poetry with be he in it.
Oh, well, it must be half a dozen from Shakespeare.
Well, there's one from Fairy Tale. Any of you remember it? Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. I think that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mrs. Klemmer and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Try this one from Pierre O. Florence of Evanston, Illinois. What would be your destination if you spoke of going for a rest to each of these places? Suppose you said that you were going to the island. Where would you be going? To the island, Mr. Levant.
You mean for a rest?
Yes. Can you imagine such a thing?
Well, Alcatraz.
Well, that might be your idea of a rest, Mr. Levant. As a matter of fact, I have to give you a kind of credit on this, Mr. Levant, because the next one is, where would you be going if you were going to the Rock? Now, Mr.
For a rest to Alcatraz.
Very good, yes. If you said the Rock, I think you'd mean Alcatraz, but if you said the island, at least in the eastern part of the United States. Yes, Mr.
Oh,
Adams?
I was going to say Catalina.
Well,
I suppose
that's
a dimension.
In the east, Mr. Adams?
Blackwell's Island.
No. I don't see why your mind necessarily runs the same way that Mr. Levant does.
Long Island?
Yes, Long Island, or Coney Island.
Well, it all depends. I mean, they don't know about Long Island here.
That's true, but you must remember that we're talking to a lot of other people, too, Mr. Levant. I suppose you said you were going to the Cape. What would you mean? The Cape, Miss Struther?
Cape Cod.
Cape Cod, yes. We had three hands on that. Cape Cod, and we got two out of three. Try this one from T.A. Gatchell of Cincinnati, Ohio. Identify these people. In each case, it's a pair, father and son. In the first case, the father wrote novels, and the son wrote plays. Who are they, Miss Struther?
Would it be Dumas?
It would be indeed. What were their first names?
Alexandre and Pierre.
And Fee.
Yes,
Pierre.
Alexandre
Pierre.
Alexandre.
Right. Mr. Curran?
Well, the son also wrote novels. Adamo Camellia is a
novel. That's right. That's quite true.
I know another one. The Tolstoy boys.
Father and son?
Why not?
I'm not sure that the relationship was not nephew there, but I'm not positive.
He had 18 children.
He did?
Yeah, we will not go through them all now.
No, we will not. In this case, the father was an actor, and the son is a playwright. What pair, Mr. Kieran?
Why, Sacha Guitry.
That's right.
Father an actor, the son a playwright. I think that's quite right.
That's right.
O'Neill and O'Neill.
Our own James O'Neill and Eugene O'Neill.
The Guitrys was reversed, as far as John is concerned.
Is it the other way around?
Yeah, the old man was a playwright and a... Well, I'm a little mixed up, too.
They're both playwrights and actors, yeah. I think.
I think both playwrights and actors, so that the answer would be quite right, Mr. Kieran. How about the mother an actress and the daughter a director? What famous pair would that be, Mr. Levant?
That's Dom, May Whitty, and Margaret Webster.
Yes, Dame May Whitty and Margaret Webster.
It's Dom, right. Not Dame.
Is it really Dom?
I don't know, ask Miss Brother.
Definitely not. My mother was one, and it was Dame.
Dame.
I've never corrected you in my life. You know that.
I'm glad to see Mr. Levant learned something on this program. From you, Miss Brother. He won't take anything from me. Dame May Whitty. Yeah. Try this one. Eva Potkin of New York City sends this one in. To what or whom does each of these refer? The first is Red Count, the second White King, and the third Black Prince. How about Red Count, Mr. Levant?
It's a horse.
The horse?
Oh, no, it's a blood count.
Yes, it's blood count. Yeah.
It's also... Same thing. One's a saliva test and the other's a blood count.
It is a blood count. Red blood corpuscles per cubic centimeter of blood. Or maybe it refers to the count that Hitler is going to take in Russia. Mr. Kieran?
White King is one of the kings in chess. Yes. White King and Black King.
Right, quite right. And finally, the Black Prince refers to what, Miss Struther?
Well, the Black Prince of Wales.
Yes. Who was that?
Oh, how I ought to know that. Son of Edward the first.
Third, I think.
Third.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, it was around that time, and he was killed. He fought at the Battle of Crecy, I believe.
Yeah, and why was he called Black Prince?
Because he wore black armor.
Yes, we think that was the reason. How about this one from Dr. J.J. Schneider of Brooklyn, New York? What land in the Western Hemisphere was once owned by Russia? Let's just get Mr. Kieran.
Alaska.
Once owned by Denmark? Mr. Kieran?
Virgin Islands.
And once owned by Sweden. That's a tough one. I stopped you on
Delaware.
That.
Delaware.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams. Very good. Part of Delaware, which between 1638 and 1655 passed from Sweden to Holland and then to England. Thank you, Miss Struther, for helping us to make this evening our final one for this season a success. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And so, ladies and gentlemen, goodbye for a time until September 13th. In the meantime, don't forget to send your questions to Information, Please, 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City, because we want to be well prepared to stump the experts on September 13th, the first Monday after Labor Day, when we return to the air. During the 8 weeks we'll be absent, one from the other, the H.J. Hines Company presents over most of these stations at the same time Vacation Serenade, a delightful pop concert featuring the outstanding American singers Dorothy Kirsten and Reed Kennedy, with the orchestra under the direction of the celebrated maestro of Metropolitan Opera Company, Wilfred Pelletier. You'll want to hear every one of their programs. And now, on behalf of the H.J. Hines Company and our Information Please Company, I wish you good luck, good health, and the best of everything until we meet again to stump the experts.